Chapter 4. Plunging into the fog, Kurt crossed the road to the Pelican Cafe. His contact, an MI5 courier, known to Kurt only as John, was sitting at his usual place by the window, a teapot, cup and saucer, together with his hat and a copy of the Daily Mirror on the table in front of him. Kurt sat down, placing his newspaper beside John's.
"What would you like?"
John spoke with an upper-class accent, and carried a permanent look of hood-eyed boredom. The girl behind the counter hurried over and placed a fresh cup and saucer on the table in front of Kurt. Standing a smidgen closer to Kurt than was necessary, she smiled.
"That's quite a bad one, but I think it's lifting."
She made eye contact. She had large crystal blue eyes and perfect teeth, like a Hollywood actress.
"You couldn't see your hand in front of your face earlier," said Kurt.
"What can I get you? A fresh pot of tea, perhaps?"
"Nothing for me," said Kurt. John dismissed her with a wave of his hand.
"Thank you, miss."
She smiled at Kurt some more and moved away, her hips swaying. Kurt and John shared a short, desultory exchange about the weather. Then John picked up Kurt's newspaper, put on his hat, and left the cafe. Kurt ran his eyes over the Daily Mirror headlines. The Anzio campaign was going well, although the enemy was holding out in the monastery at Monte Cassino, which was under almost constant aerial bombardment. A second article carried news of a huge bombing raid on Berlin two nights earlier. Aided by a diversionary raid over Frankfurt, over 1,000 bombers had dropped 2,500 tons of high explosives on the capital in a 30-minute raid. According to the report, the city was still burning 24 hours later. Kurt read that article twice and shivered. He had friends in Berlin. He put the newspaper down and scratched an itch behind his left ear. Arnold was worried about what would happen to him when the Allies won the war. Perhaps he was right to worry, but there had been no mention of the other possible outcome. If Germany won the war, Arnold would face certain death as a traitor. And so would Kurt. Arnold was a pompous ass, but he was an educated pompous ass. It was difficult to understand how people like him had fallen so completely under the spell of the Führer. And there were millions like him. What was it about that angry, ranting, dyspeptic 54-year-old that had captivated most of the adult population of Germany? Through the window, the fog was thinning. He could make out vague shapes of people moving about on the far pavement. A beautiful red MGPA midget drew up outside. A tall man in a trench coat and fedora climbed out, stepped into the cafe, and sat at Kurt's table. The stranger removed his hat, revealing a head of red hair. He held out a hand. Kurt was immediately on his guard. He ignored the hand. "Do I know you?"
"My name's Greg Ellis. I'm in the same business as you."
His boyish face lit up with a smile.
"We both work for Tar Robertson. We need to talk."
"What about?" Ellis pointed at the empty cup on the table.
"Are you finished here, Kevin? I could walk with you."
Kurt's heart jumped in his chest. "How do you know my name?"
"I've been in the game a lot longer than you. Come on, we can't talk here."
Kurt's instinct was to tell this stranger to go the hell, but his curiosity had been aroused, and there was something engaging in Ellis's manner, an indefinable, infectious enthusiasm. Kurt waved goodbye to the waitress and followed Ellis into the fog. Ellis turned north. They walked together briskly onto a green area, dark and deserted in the cold, damp air. Ellis kept his hands jammed in his pockets. Kurt envied the man his trench coat and hat. His own short leather jacket was fine as far as it went, but the damp seeped through his trousers.
"Where are we going?" "I thought we could walk about the common. We can talk in comfort here without being overheard."
They strolled on together, following an east-west path. The fog was still thick enough to diffuse the lights from the houses on the north side of the common, creating strange, ghost-like effects.
"How did you find me?"
"Does it matter?"
Kurt stopped. "Tell me how you found me." Ellis turned back to face him with a broad grin. "It wasn't difficult. I followed John." They resumed their walk. "What did you want to talk about?" It was Ellis who stopped this time. "I needed to ask you a question. How have you been getting on with your man? What's his designation?" The hairs bristled on Kurt's neck. "I don't think we should discuss that." "My man is F-17. At least, he was." "What do you mean he was?" "Not important," said Ellis. "Just tell me you haven't noticed anything strange recently."
"Like what?"
"Anything. Anything at all." "No, I don't think so. Why do you ask?" A cloud passed over Ellis's face. "My man's been blown."
"That's unfortunate. What happened?"
"When I turned up as usual on Tuesday, he was gone. The house was empty. He was blown, out of the blue, with no warning." They reached the edge of the common and turned back.
"You spoke to someone about it?"
"There was no discussion, not before or after. I got a short note in the post. It said my man's cover was compromised. They would let me know when, if they needed my services again."
"Bad luck."
"Luck had nothing to do with it, old son. His cover was blown on purpose. It was Tar Robertson's decision."
"You're sure of your facts? How can you know that?"
"Believe me, it was obvious. The evidence is irrefutable."
"Why would Major Robertson blow your man's cover? Wasn't he pulling his weight?"
Ellis shrugged. "The material he was given to transmit became less and less important. Nothing but weather reports at the end."
That hit the mark with Kurt. "I don't believe Major Robertson would sanction anything like that."
Ellis produced a packet of Navy Cut. He offered them to Kurt. Kurt declined. Ellis shook the packet under Kurt's nose. "Go ahead, take one. Stick it behind your ear for later."
"I don't smoke."
Ellis took a cigarette from the packet, tapped both ends on the box, and lit it with a lighter. The light from the flame lasted no more than 2 seconds, but it revealed Ellis as he really was, a man older than his looks, more careworn than fresh-faced. Kurt took a moment to gather his thoughts. "I find it hard to believe that Major Robertson would deliberately betray one of his own agents." Ellis drew on his cigarette. "How well do you know Tar Robertson?" Kurt made no reply, and Ellis barreled on, punctuating his delivery with the hand holding the cigarette. "He began his career as a one-man operation, investigating strange lights and carrier pigeons."
"Did you know that?"
"No." "It's true. That was in 1933. The Secret Service was based in Wormwood Scrubs Prison at that time. Then he ran a double agent called Snow. That was a disaster, unmitigated. Have you heard those stories?" Kurt shook his head. "Snow was a Welshman working for the Germans. He offered to double for us. Robertson was assigned as his case officer. Snow roped in a string of others sympathetic to the Germans before his cover was blown. Robertson gave him complete freedom to roam around the country spying on all sorts of military installations."
"Unaccompanied?"
"Completely. The idea was to let him operate as a real spy would, and then doctor his reports to the Krauts. That was in 1940 and 1941. He was given a car with limitless petrol coupons. He collected a lot of intelligence on the Royal Navy, its bases and ships. He even photographed the entire East Coast radar defense system and gave the pictures to the enemy."
"Robertson didn't prevent that."
"No one's sure what happened, but Snow was allowed to fly back and forth to meet his Abwehr contact in Portugal. My guess is that he pulled the wool over Robertson's eyes and carried the pictures with him. Could easily have cost us the Battle of Britain. If it wasn't for our brave Spitfire pilots, we'd all be speaking German by now."
"So Snow was actually working for the Germans?"
"He was working for both sides at the same time, old boy, and both sides paid him handsomely for his services. Then the Jerrys asked him to recruit a Welsh nationalist who might be persuaded to raise a stink."
Kurt laughed.
"A Welsh nationalist? I know, it sounds crazy, but the Nazis thought there were enough extreme nationalists in Wales to conduct a campaign of sabotage. They tried the same thing with the IRA in Ireland, of course. Snow recruited some Welsh nutter and gave him to the Germans.
And MI5 swallowed it?
Hook, line and sinker. Giving Snow more cash, I suppose. You've got it. Snow ran his Welsh saboteur, so he was given control of all the money.
They turned back toward Ellis's car. You say Major Robertson ran this fiasco?
He did. In fact, he was promoted. He sits on the XX committee, so he's involved in all major decisions to do with the double cross.
I thought that was the job of the London controlling section, said Kurt.
The XX or 20 committee reports to the LCS, Ellis replied. To be fair to Tar, he's grown into the job since the early days, but you can imagine the complexity of his job, running an army of double agents.
An army? How many are we talking about?
I don't have a figure, Kevin. My guess would be a couple of dozen at least. It's certainly a lot of agents.
Kurt chewed that over for a few moments. Then he said, "What do you want me to do?"
"Not a thing, old boy. I just wanted to check whether your man was still operating and to warn you about what might be coming down the tracks."
Out of all that Ellis had told him, Kurt articulated his worst fear. "What will become of your man?" They arrived back at the MG. Ellis dropped his cigarette on the path, crushing it under his shoe.
Robertson had no more use for him. He jumped into the car. His engine started with an enthusiastic roar. "I'd be willing to bet he's been hanged already," he shouted.
Kurt stood and watched the MG drive away until it was swallowed by the fog.